Namaste, Aditi. Hello, Alexandra.
Hi.
Hi, Alexandra. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm really excited to talk to you today.
Yes. So I hope everybody has their chai or favorite beverage, because today we have Alexandra Pauchescu from Romania and currently in Berlin.
Ah, thank you for joining us, Alexandra, all the way from Berlin. It's, what is it, 6 o'clock there right now?
Yeah, it's 6 in the evening. So we had a kind of a sunny day today, although in Berlin, it's quite a problem with the sun.
Oh, really? Ooh, that's not nice. Well, it's a good day to have a chat then. Alexandra is from Romania originally. She was born and raised in Bucharest. She then married a diplomat and has been traveling. She's a diplomatic spouse, a diplomatic trailing spouse is what's on her website. And she goes with her husband and her kids, currently residing in Berlin. Last year, Alexandra, you wrote a book, which is something about the experiences in your life as a diplomatic spouse. The title of the book is Just a Diplomatic Spouse, A True Story of Life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a story about my diplomatic years, along with my husband and the family and the places that we visited. So it's a kind of a mixture between, let's say, a blog, maybe a diary of the diplomatic events that I took part in. It also has an extensive part about traveling in the countries that we lived before. It talks also about etiquette and protocol, diplomatic protocol. A lot of people don't know a lot of aspects about this part, so I try to explain a bit for people from outside, and also try to talk about the real diplomatic life beyond cliches, beyond what people think, and sometimes it's not quite the reality from inside. So I try to to bring some light to it.
So why was it important to you to bring all these things to light?
Because over the years, I have met a lot of people who are not familiar with what this life is all about. And because, as I also wrote in the book, all the Hollywood movies and everything usually picture the diplomats in a certain way, which is kind of cliched. So it's always like the perfect wife, elegant, pearls around the neck, and the husband with perfect suit, and sometimes or most of the times also like associated with spies or...
Oh, gosh.
Of actions, and going to cocktails and soirees and zipping fine drinks. So, of course, it happens sometimes. So we also have this kind of events, or let's say we used to have them before COVID and all this started to happen, because nowadays, especially in Berlin, everything is closed. So all the diplomatic events are basically canceled for a year now. But let's talk about what was life before that. So it has also this part, glamorous part, but it's a lot more. And most of the people don't know, are not aware of all this. So it has also a lot of difficult days and a lot of emotional parts. You leave from a place to another. You have to leave everything behind. You make new connections. You always start fresh. But meanwhile, you have to have a certain appearance. So it's like you don't represent only yourself. So you have to be aware all the time that you also represent your country. So you project an image which is important not only to you but to others. So you have to be careful. So I think this add up to not to the stress maybe, but to the pressure that you're in. So it's a little bit more complicated than that.
Mm-hmm. So I wonder, when you talk about how carefully you have to present yourself and everything, I was wondering, is that something that you get trained for when you start? I mean, is there any training that you get when you get into this? I mean, it would seem really, really scary to do this without some orientation, right?
I think it depends from country to country. I also mentioned in the book at some point, because depending from which country you are, the experience might be slightly different, because some families from some countries, maybe rich countries, or let's say they travel with chauffeur, with right. cook, with nannies, with everything, they have everything. Others just with some suitcases. So it's really depending what country you're coming from. So the Correct. Experience might be very different. But I think most of the things you learn in time. At the beginning, nobody really prepares you for that. And that's the problem. And that's one of the reasons that I wanted to write a book. And I received a lot of messages from maybe diplomatic spouses at the beginning of the road who really wrote to me thanking me that, of course, the book is like kind of a memoir. So it's deeply personal. It's about our own experiences, but it can relate to a lot of other people, and not only diplomats, also expats. When you are new to it, you don't know exactly what to expect, and nobody can really train you or prepare you for that. So you have to experience it bit by bit. You learn about a lot of things, about etiquette, about how to approach new people, about how to behave. So a lot of things, but you just need time to adjust it and to learn from place to place. So now I think when I look back on how I started and how I used to, from simple things like set up a table or go to an event or mingle, or how I used to do it like 12, 13 years ago and how I do it today, it's a lot different. So
you learn on the job.
Yeah, so you learn it. But the thing is that you have to like it first, and to be open to receive all the informations. And of course, maybe not all of them are on your might please you, or are you just choose whatever thing that suits you, and it's also useful for your own personality.
So you said that you're doing things very differently than you did 12 or 13 years ago. So tell us, like, was there any faux pas 13 years ago?
I was just going to ask.
We're starting to think the same way, Aditi.
Yeah, we want to hear some real embarrassment.
What are you willing to share when you tripped over an ambassador's wife's dress or something?
Oh, luckily for me, it never happened.
Never happened. That's good. That would have been my story.
Yeah, but there are quite a lot of things. I mean, first of all, it's when we were in Vienna, because we were in Austria a couple of years ago, and I was working for a foundation at the United Nations. It's called United Nations Women's Guild, so it's at the UN quarters in Vienna, and I was organizing a charity event, and with a lot of stalls from different countries. And I was at the beginning, I was maybe naive, or I didn't know all these deep things. And I wasn't aware that there are countries who, I mean, I knew there were like animosities between some countries, but I wasn't aware that there is such a deep feeling that they wouldn't even accept to have the stalls to one another, or to, I mean, I didn't know that. And I organized everything on a sheet, and it was quite complicated because there are a lot of countries, so you have to put them, to arrange them all together. And I was really pleased with what I've done. And then I went to the meeting with the other organizing team, and then somebody said, "Oh no, but did you see what you do there? It's not possible. Absolutely not." And I was like, what did I do? And then they basically rearranged everything. I mean, I had done everything in a different order.
Also, there are countries that don't want to be together in the same.
I mean, I won't name them here, but there are quite a few that don't. I mean,
it they wasn't don't get just, along.
There were many cases. So they were like, for the next year, I already knew from the very beginning, okay, this one doesn't go with this one. This one has to be exactly on the other corner of the room and all the things. So, it's something that maybe, you know, it's something so small when you think of it. Yeah. So it doesn't have really any importance at all. I mean, to me, it seemed like completely insignificant, but to them it was a big deal. So in order to be able to welcome them the next year, we had to respect all these things. So this is just one example, but there are many. I mean, there are a lot of sensitive issues that you have to be aware of. And also when you are invited to a residence from a country or something, you have to study a little bit. I mean, not just like take a book and really do your homework, but study a little bit the culture and the particularities, because otherwise you might embarrass yourself first, and then maybe you put others in an awkward situation. So, and you don't want that. I mean,
you don't want your little dinner party to start a geopolitical
right. I mean, you have to avoid it. And this is, I think, this is the art really of a good diplomat, and especially the wife. I mean, the spouse. You to do everything in a way that you avoid all the possible conflicts, and to do everything in the most friendlier situation and atmosphere possible. So this is the art of it, actually. I mean, it doesn't matter if people maybe don't get along or they have their own issues. When they get together, they have to act like, okay, we are able, we are grown up, so we are able to get over it.
Yeah, so it's so funny because when I looked at the title of your book, it said "Just a Diplomatic Spouse," and now that I'm hearing you talk about it, it seems like such a glamorous and important role that you're doing, and you're actually doing your bit to, I'm guessing, to make sure that everybody stays in harmony, and you know, there are no diplomatic incidences. It's an important job that you do. And so why call the book "Just a Diplomatic Spouse"? I mean, that just kind of minimizes it a little bit?
It's kind of a sarcastic title.
Yes. Good.
but I would say, I mean, there is no official role. Like, nobody actually acknowledges the role. Like, officially, we do it, like, behind the scenes. But it's a custom that the wife, or anyway, the husband, because nowadays there are a lot of women who are diplomats, so the spouses are actually men. So it's right. The same situation, even more complicated, if you ask me, in some parts. But so it's a custom that we will support the husband's effort, and it's always, I mean, I'm doing this series of interviews with other diplomatic spouses for a diplomatic magazine, and I've heard all these nice stories about them, and everybody has their own talent, has their, another career or hobbies or something that they try to develop while at postings, different postings, and some of them, I mean, they are all so wise, and they've lived in this kind of life, and they managed to design a whole role for themselves. And they all, I mean, the idea that comes out of all these discussions is that in order to have a successful diplomat, you have to have a good wife for
a happy and fulfilled spouse.
Supportive, yeah, supportive one. Yeah. But to come back to your question about the book, so the title actually comes from a discussion that I had, like when I was at the beginning of this kind of life, and I was in a meeting, and I was maybe naive at that point, and I didn't know exactly how things are going in this world, because it's a very hierarchical world. So it's really important, depending on which level your husband is, it's also the way that it reflects the importance that you are given around the others, so to say. And it happened to when we were in a meeting and at an event, and I was talking to some people, and one of them, I mean, I was talking about something that happened a few days ago, and this gentleman asked, excuse me, but what do you exactly do at the embassy? And I said, oh, no, my husband works at the embassy. And he said, you're just the spouse. Yeah. So now I'm laughing about it. Back then, it quite affected me. I mean, I kept it to myself, and I didn't complain too much about it, but because it was the reality, but the way it sounded, it's exactly the thing that it happens to most of us, or most of the times. And nowadays, a lot of spouses try to avoid or to prove that it's not that. I mean, you are not just the spouse. You have your own personality. Most of the women who are in this position are cultivated. They have like university degrees, or they had a career that they had to leave behind, or not. It's not easy to have a portable career, a successful portable career. So most of them, they had to give up their former career, and they are trying to do something as much as possible in their new situation. So either they volunteer, as I do, or they do other things that can be like taken around the world, right, with kind of success. So especially nowadays, I think there are more and more women who have other activities besides the diplomatic activities that they would normally do. So they try to do other things too. And it's a pity just to minimize all that and to just put everybody in the same box and just label it, okay, it's the spouse.
Yeah.
And also, I'm not very comfortable with the trailing part.
I know. That's not very nice. So the next book you will write is The Diplomatic Spouse. I think that...
Yeah. It's like, no, because I also told somebody when I had another discussion, because I said, when I hear this like trailing, I have this image in my life, in my mind, it's like somebody with a lot of luggage carrying it going around on the streets. So it's the minute I hear this word, this image comes to my mind, and it's quite funny. So
wow.
So I want to come back to the topic of clothes, which we discussed before we started recording. So tell us a little bit about clothing in different countries, or your experience as a diplomatic wife, not just a diplomatic wife, but as the wife. As a very important wife, what is it that you have to wear to portray a certain image? Or is there more to it? Like, explain to us, because you said you were interested in this topic.
Yeah, first of all, also in the book, I have a chapter where I talk quite a lot about different clothing styles, and also like the dress codes that are usually put on the invitation. So whenever you receive an invitation for an event, you have to check there for the dress code, and usually the dress code is specified, so you have to follow it. And I would say, I mean, diplomatic world is not shallow, but clothes are important. So the appearances are important, let's face it. So it's important how you present yourself. And I also do trainings in intercultural communication. And I say there that when you see somebody for the first time, the most important, I mean, what you actually talk to somebody, it counts only for 7% of the whole message perception. So the most important part is the visual one. So it's like when you meet somebody, the first impression that you do is how they look. So the clothes are also important.
Part of that. Yeah, part of that.
So you have to pay attention to that. And especially for diplomats, I would say the first thing is you have to be elegant, but not too elegant. So not to overreact, so not too flashy, not too, in certain scales. And it suits me at some up until a point, because I always like, I mean, I like clothes, I have to be honest, and I always like to dress up nicely. So when this part of the, let's say, job, it's not a job, but let's call it this way, it came very natural to me, because I like dresses, I like high heels and all these things. And it's very funny because, for example, when we moved to Berlin, for the first day of school, our kids, so we had just moved for, I think, 2 weeks or something. And school started, and it was the first day of school. And our son was a first grader. And here, first grade is really important. So when school starts, I mean, the first day of school in your life, it's really, really important. Right. And it's celebrated with the whole family, and everybody goes to the school, and then they go to a restaurant to celebrate it. So it's really a big deal. And we knew about it from before, so I had read about it. And of course, also in Romania, it's important, but not that important. But I knew here was a big event. So we prepared with that. And we went to the school, and we were like, I was wearing high heels, and my husband was like pretty decent with a jacket and everything. I mean, not a suit, but still quite elegant. And we went there, and everybody was with like backpacks, and and we were like aliens from another planet.
So, oh, I'm sure.
So we were completely out of the picture. And I felt a bit awkward because I could see other people were looking at us, and maybe they were wondering who these are and why are they so elegant for this occasion. Wow. So it's here, I would say in Berlin, except for the diplomatic events, of course, which is a different thing, and where people, actually international people, are meeting, and they all try to follow some dress rules, dress codes. On the street, usually, I mean, people are really, really casual. I mean, more than casual. So, which is something that it's not really my style. So I cannot say that I try to integrate. So I will keep my own dress style. I don't care about the others. But I was a little bit shocked at the beginning. And I have this, not questions, but every time we were invited somewhere and it was outside the diplomatic circle, I would think, okay, how do I dress now? Because I don't want to appear overdressed there. So what do I wear? For the diplomatic events, it's easier because most of the people are try to follow some guiding rules. So it's quite easy. And there are also a lot of events where you are either required or you are encouraged to wear your national costume. So if you have a national costume from your country, it's nice to wear it. And it's really, really nice when you can see like a room full of people, very colorful, with all these costumes from all over the world. It's so nice. I mean, I really like these events. Yeah. And I think they are very joyful, and everybody admires the others and the costumes, and they are usually like quite delicate and colorful.
And it's an icebreaker, right? It's an icebreaker, a natural icebreaker to talk, to ask somebody about their costume. And then that's a natural way to start a conversation, right, with somebody.
Right. And it's like, I think especially in this kind of events, it proves exactly the definition of being an international citizen. I mean, it proves that diversity is really beautiful. This is the definition. I mean, when you see this room full of different costumes from all over the world, and you see how beautiful all of them are in their own way. This is where you understand that we are all beautiful. Doesn't matter where we come from. It's really nice that we are together and we try to find common ground. So I really like that. And I think now already 2 years ago, maybe I organized a fashion show for UNICEF, because now I coordinate a group at UNICEF in Berlin, and we organized a fundraising event, but it was like as a fashion show with people from different countries wearing their national costumes. So it was like a runway show, but with costumes from different countries. It was so beautiful. I mean, really nice. And they were like, most of them were students from the university from different countries, and they came with their costumes and they went on the runway. I also wear my costume and I was with my daughter there on the runway. So it was really nice. I mean, a nice event and also nice memories to see all these people together, and really nice.
Wow. What is the Romanian?
Romania is quite a big country. So it has, depending from the different parts, there are some special elements or colors that are used in the costume, but more or less it's similar. I would say, especially in the last few years, some parts of our costume have been used also on the big runway shows, and they were like borrowed from quite well-known designers. It's this white blouse, which is from a very thin material, and it also has some suit elements.
Okay.
On it, and the skirt is usually quite richly embroidered.
Wow.
It takes a lot of time to do it. It's really, really beautiful when you see it. And it's there are costumes who are like over 100 years old, so they are quite impressive when you see the work, and you can imagine how long it took to do it. So it's quite a work itself just to try to preserve it for as many years. So it's but it's really, really beautiful. And also, it's quite flattering, you know, on the on you when you put it. So no matter what shape you're in, it's quite flattering for everybody. So it's even another example and another advantage to wear it as much as possible.
Wow. I loved how well you adapted your, you know, the your style of dressing and stuff to what you had in or what you, you know, the kind of life that you're leading. Because not only do you have to dress appropriately for your diplomatic life, but also dress appropriately to the country that you're actually living in at the time. Mm-hmm. And then also bring your national costume in play when during these diplomatic events, right? Do you have any experiences where you met people through these diplomatic channels, and you you were able to share what you wear, what how you eat, what sort of life you live in, in the country back home? I mean, it's just a way of connecting with people.
And not only connection, it's also a way to promoting your country.
Yes.
I think it helps a great deal. I mean, people see you, and but they see beyond you, they see the country. So it's like, that's why I say it's always important how you present yourself, no matter who you really are. I mean, if you are in an official capacity or you're just the spouse.
Yeah. Just the spouse.
I mean, you're still from the country. I mean, when you go to an event, people ask, where are you from? Or usually you have sometimes, for example, for the diplomatic club, usually have this tag, name tag, and it's the name and the name of your country. So people automatically, they associate you with the country. So I think it's really important how you present yourself. And of course, I mean, you don't have to wear only, it's not only when you wear your national costume, but if you have like some shoes maybe who are made from a Romanian designer, or if you have a dress, a nice dress which is made from a Romanian designer, or things like this. I mean, you can also, because people will, if it's a nice dress, for example, somebody will ask you, oh, what a nice dress, oh, where did you get it, or and it's Romanian, oh really? So it's another way. It's called cultural diplomacy, you know, and usually it helps a great deal and can do wonders for your country. So if you know how to use it correctly and how to promote the country in this way, I think it's really helpful. And most of the times it makes a lot of impression, and a lot more than like a normal advertising would do. I think 3 years ago, I've been to this workshop at the Indonesian embassy, and it was about this art craft, which is called batik. I'm not sure if you are familiar, you know about it. And I mean, I never knew, I knew the name, but I never knew how it was actually done. And I was at this workshop where they actually, they taught us how to do it. And everybody has their own piece of cloth. And we were, we made a small scarf for ourselves. And we made it with like, because they do it, maybe you don't know, before you color it, you can write something. We you use a kind of a wax, and you put some design there, and then in the end when you will remove it, the whole pattern will still be there. So it was really, really a nice technique that I wasn't aware of, and it's like I will always remember and associate it. So this is from Indonesia.
Correct.
So these are things that usually stick to your mind, and it's like in a pleasant way, and also it lasts longer.
And I think it's a much more lasting lesson. It's more lasting than actually reading or being taught it, you know.
Oh, of course. Also, I remember when we were in Vienna, I was at an event because we talked about tea and chai. And I was at an event where somebody from India presented all this tradition. And also, I wasn't aware that different types of tea are meant to be boiled in a certain water at a certain temperature, not all of them at the same temperature. I didn't know that before, and all these types of tea. And so you learn a lot of things that maybe you weren't interested before, or you weren't aware of them. It's normal that you will remember at least part of it for a long time. So you associate the country with the experience.
Wow.
I have two comments. One is about batik. So batik is also part of Indian culture and Indian clothing decorating traditions. And we used to do batik in school. So that was curricular. Yeah. So you start painting with the wax, and then you dip it in different colors, and then you remove some wax and you add some more. And so anyway, that was one thing. But you segued so beautifully into
I know.
And the traditions of India, but we want to know about your traditions. Is there like a diplomatic way of serving tea? And then is there a Romanian way of serving tea or making tea?
I don't think Romania has such a big tradition when it comes to tea. Honestly, in Romania, I think people drink more coffee than tea. So we have this traditional way of making coffee, like on the stove, you know, so you really boil it for a long time. So it's really strong, a strong coffee. But for me, tea, especially for the last few years, it's been also a social thing. So when you meet somebody, it's nice to have something to drink. And if I don't drink coffee, so tea is perfect. Especially in Berlin, there are so many places where you can go and have a very, very, very good tea, and with all these flavors and all this. For example, there is one of my favorite chocolate place in Berlin, and it's really, really well known in the, it's called Rausch. It's one of the best chocolate houses here, and they also have this tea which is like has a chocolate flavor flavor. So it's
nice,
it's really. Yeah,
combining two of my favorite things
inside. Yeah, it has only the flavor, but it's really, really good. I mean, you could think that maybe you drink chocolate, hot chocolate, but it's not hot chocolate, it's tea, but with this flavor. So just to give you an example, I mean, maybe it's not like the traditional tea, like experts will have. But for me, I mean, I'm more in this part, or if I do it at home, I also do things like I boil water and I cut the slices of lemon and maybe just a little bit of ginger, and I put it inside and I let it rest for like 10 minutes, and then I will drink it. So maybe it's not really
no,
a
no,
tea.
But that, this is a very healthy way of drinking tea, right? So the ginger and the lemon is very good for you. Yeah.
But the most impressive tea ceremony that I had the chance to see was at the Japanese embassy. They have this tea ceremony, which is really, really impressive. I mean, I was not aware of it. I didn't know what to expect. And I was invited a few years ago at the Japanese embassy, as I said, but it was also with the occasion of the New Year's Eve. And they combined like the ceremony of tea and also a New Year's Eve dinner, which is also special because they have a special box like for New Year's Eve with all these, of course, things are made out of fish, but they are all very symbolic. I mean, it's nothing, it's everything has their own meaning in this box. And the tea ceremony, I mean, I was really, really impressed with it. It was really, really beautiful and calm and all these sounds. I mean, I remember the lady was doing it. I mean, just touching it very nicely and all these sounds of the metal. It makes a big impression on you. So it's the same as I mentioned before. I mean, when I think of their tea, I will always remember this experience, yeah, because yeah, it really impressed me, and it was something that I never seen before, so it made quite an impression on me.
Yeah, I've heard the Japanese tea ceremony is really, really something to experience. I've never actually gone for one, but I've heard it's very elaborate and extremely, you know, it's really special. Right.
It's like it's very choreographical, and it's yeah, like very, it's like a theater.
Yeah,
part.
Yeah,
this
right,
is how I've seen it, and it was like it was very impressive, because we went to the embassy, and there inside they have this special place especially designed for this one. So we all took our shoes, and when we went there and we stood and we sit, and then the lady who was doing it, she just came and nicely she put the water in. But the thing is that it's an experience which is deeply it involves all the senses.
Mm-hmm.
So it's because it's a quiet room, so you hear like water pouring and all this, like touching the metal and everything, and then the smell of it. So it involves all senses. So that's why it's very powerful.
Wonderful.
Wow. So I think you're not just the diplomat's wife. You're actually a world harmonizer. Yeah, like you are creating harmony in the world by absorbing cultures, by, you know, putting cultures together, by, you know, just by being a diplomat's wife.
Yeah, how lovely. We have learned so much about Romania from you and about the diplomatic life from you. So I really wanted to thank you for chatting with us. And I believe you're putting together another book.
Tell us about it so we can read
yeah,
it too.
Thank you. Actually, it's a book completely different from the first one. So first one, as I said, is a memoir, Just a Diplomatic Spouse. It's basically about the diplomatic life. But this one that I worked for the last couple of months, it's a children's book. And it's also kind of related because it involves traveling around the world and also developing children's appetite for traveling and discovering new places. So it's kind of related to what I'm passionate about. But it's for children, so it's
different audience,
different genre. Yeah, well, we look forward to it anyway. And I am a teacher, so I read children's books every day. Elementary. Yes,
so maybe I will send my book to you when it's finished.
That's a great idea.
I'd love to. I teach English here in New Jersey to immigrants. So,
perfect. So the book is in English. Also, the other one, the Just a Diplomatic Spouse, it's the original version is in English. So it's I meant it to do it in English because I thought this way I would reach more people from all over the world. And it does. I mean, the book is available on Amazon, so it's basically everywhere. And this was the beauty of internet, let's say, and the technology these days, because with just a click, you can reach everybody. And I receive messages from Asia, from Australia, from Canada. So places that like 23, 30 years ago, maybe I couldn't reach that easily. So it was really nice. I mean, technology nowadays helps, I think, in many ways.
It's instantly connected to the whole world, right?
Yeah, and actually we got connected through it, so we
yes,
should be thankful.
Thank you. This was really, really wonderful. Thank you so much.